KLAK 1260 AM Amory. And always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. The latest on those talks to get a ceasefire and freeing hostages in Gaza, including Americans, from White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby.
We believe we're closer than we've ever been, so we're hopeful. But there's still work to be done, and nothing is done until it's all done, so we're going to keep working on this.
State Department reporting just over 1,200 Americans and their eligible family members are still waiting to leave Gaza. Also says the Israeli-Hamas war has killed at least six Americans. The MGM Grand Detroit Union Casino workers are picketing again after voting down last Friday's tentative contract offer.
Was it disappointing? No. No. Because I'm not going to stop until I get what I want.
Europe's climate change service, Copernicus, says global average temperatures hit a new record high last Friday. Gas prices keep dropping to an average of $3.29 for regular. This is ABC News. They held an emotional funeral for a Mississippi man who's at the center of an alleged police cover-up.
A belated funeral in Jackson, Mississippi for 37-year-old Dexter Wade, 8 months after his family says he was struck and killed by an off-duty police car, then buried in a field anonymously. Civil rights attorney and Wade family lawyer Ben Crum calls it a cover-up that's coming to an end.
Giving him a respectable funeral as a first step to get justice.
Reverend Al Sharpton also speaking at the service, saying it was a cold and calculated plot that requires accountability.
Till we see the prosecution of everybody involved.
Wade's family wants the Justice Department to investigate. Derek Dennis, ABC News.
An Atlanta area woman trying to get a refund for mistakenly tipping more than $7,000 for a Subway Italian sub.
It's a lot of money, and, you know, I'm not that big of a tipper. I'm definitely not that big of a tipper.
Subway says a tip is a tip is a tip. Andy Field, ABC News.
If you love them enough to listen to them practice the same song on tuba,
please be done.
Over and over and over and over and over. Then surely you'll check nhtsa.gov/the right seat to make sure they're correctly buckled in the back seat.
Sounds good, honey.
Check today at nhtsa.gov/the right seat. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
UpUS Kids presents What to Expect When You're Expecting a Teenager. Learning the lingo.
Jelly. Jelly adjective. Jelly is a shorter, better way to say jealous, as in, Chloe, I am like so jelly of your unicorn phone case.
You don't have to speak teen to be a perfect parent. Thousands of teens in foster care will love you just the same. Visit AdoptUSKids.org, brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AdoptUS Kids, and the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I'm not even clear from conflicting headlines whether or not Robin Voss has the cojones.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehout. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. Governor Evers is vetoing a Republican proposal to cut state income taxes by $2 billion and to expand a tax credits parents use to pay for childcare. The GOP bill was put forward after Republicans rejected Evers' proposed $1 billion boost to workforce programs and childcare. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hears arguments in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps on Tuesday. Jeff Mandel of the liberal group Law Forward says the current Republican maps are unconstitutional because they're not contiguous.
They're not all made up of one uninterrupted chunk of land, and that is in conflict with the words of the Constitution, which requires the districts to be contiguous.
Mandel was on Upfront on WISN-TV. Lawyers for the map supporters are expected to argue that contiguous has different meanings. I'm Nate Wiggehout, Civic Media News.
It's the Bucks and the Wizards tonight. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks travel east to play the Washington Wizards tonight at the Capital One Arena. The Bucks put away the Mavericks Saturday night, 132-125. College football, the Wisconsin Badgers keep their bowl game dreams alive after an overtime thriller 24-17 against Nebraska. Wisconsin faces Minnesota in the Twin Cities Saturday afternoon. NFL, the Packers with a 23-20 victory over the Chargers in a hard-fought game. Both Packers running backs Aaron Jones and Emmanuel Wilson going down to injuries. And it's a short week. Green Bay plays the Lions Thursday in an NFL Classic game on Thanksgiving Day in Detroit. Packers quarterback Jordan Love.
Yeah, I mean, we got a really quick turnaround, so we'll take the day to enjoy it. But, yeah, this is going to be a tight turnaround for this week, seeing the Lions. So it's definitely a week that we got to just focus on getting our bodies back and studying up on the Lions again.
That's Jordan Love. With sports, I'm Mike Clemens.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast tonight with a low of 32. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. High of 40 tomorrow. Cloudy. Tomorrow night, lows around 23. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 40.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us. Like smelt fries and music on the river, we're uniquely Amory. This is Lake Air 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station. It's time for the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is the voice of the working class, Rick Smith.
And welcome, brothers, sisters, working class heroes. This is the Rick Smith Show. Thanks so much for being here today on the big program. Lots to get to, lots to talk about. Big day, Joe Biden turns 81, pardons turkeys. Yes, Liberty and Bell both got a presidential pardon, so they will not be on the plate on Thursday. And the right lost their mind on both affairs. He's old. Yeah, we know the president's old. And the turkeys. And look, you know, as I was watching the right-wing coverage of the turkey pardoning, which I got to tell you, I still think is a stupid thing to do every year. And I say that when Trump did it. I said it when Obama did it. I think it's just a dumb thing to do. But, you know, we've been doing it for so long, it just seems like, well, it's on the calendar. We've got to do something. So, but the right losing their minds over the fact that, you know, Joe Biden does struggle with getting some words out. And, you know, that's part of getting older. That's part of his speech problems. It's part of a bunch of things. But it got me thinking, you know, in this era of things to be thankful for, I am not thankful for right-wing media and all of the assaults and the attacks on people. I couldn't help think today, because you go back and you think about the FDR era and what the news media chose to report on back during that time was not his disability. No, they didn't have big headline, Roosevelt couldn't stand up. They didn't do any of that. They actually, their policy kind of was something important. And what policies are they complaining about today? What do you ask are they upset about? Well, my inbox today full of right-wing groups telling me that Joe Biden is making Thanksgiving much more expensive. It's all Joe Biden's fault. Now, granted, Thanksgiving dinner this year going to be less than it was last year. Costs have come down. There will be some family savings, and that's a good thing. But they are all upset because out there somewhere, they've been talking about this for a while. This has been one of those things that's been out there for some time. But, you know, Biden is considering a 300% tariff on tin coming into the country. You know, the metal that goes into your corn, the cans of corn, the cans of soup. Your cans of beans, your tuna, you know, your canned fruit, your chilies. Yes, all of that going to cost fractions of a penny more than they normally would. But according to them, this is the beginning of the end of Thanksgiving. And I got to tell you, it's just, I kept shaking my head going, this is today's outrage? Is this what the outrage factory? I would like a side of outrage, please. It's like going to a restaurant and the only thing on the menu is outrage. I would like some outrage, please. Can I have a side of outrage with maybe, you know, a little outrage for dessert? That seems to be the the sad reality. Just outrage. So again, today's outrage, you know, Joe Biden is considering putting tariffs on things. And I don't think it's going to happen. But there's part of me that goes, it kind of should. And again, their argument is you know, these are protectionists. And I say, I'm a protectionist. We're all protectionists. You know, when we leave our house, we lock the door, right? I've got a dog. Those are protectionist policies. I'm not an isolationist. I don't have a giant moat around my house filled with alligators with stay out, don't talk to us, go away. I don't have that. But that's what the right and these crazy Joe Biden's going to ruin Thanksgiving by protecting the steel industry in our country because evidently big steel. Do you know that we in this country used to be the world's producer of steel? And there was a time, I know it's been a while, but there was a time when we produced the world's steel. And I go back to the bridge in Trenton, New Jersey. Trenton makes the world takes. We now produce about as much steel as the margin of error in the calculation of what the Chinese make in steel. So by saying, you know what, maybe we should protect what little industry we do have, but no, it's big steel. But by protecting what little industry we do have, because, you know, got to tell you, the lesson from World War II, and this sticks in my mind, is that we were able to turn factories that made cars and tin cans and, you know, whatever. We were able to turn those factories into production for the war machine in the event something big and bad happened. And now, look, I'm not a warmonger. I'm not someone who says, hey, let's war up. But I am someone who says, you know, maybe we should have the capacity in the event that someone else. I spent today because, you know, clearly the outrage machine wanted me to know that Joe Biden was going to destroy Thanksgiving by putting tariffs on tin cans. So I spent some time reading the think tank approved focus group tested messaging. And one of those came from a guy named Derek Chevron. David Chevron. David is the president and CEO of the Consumer Brands Association. They're a trade association for America's $2.1 trillion food, beverage, and consumer product industry. $2.1 trillion. And they're worried about the tin can. Fractions of a penny going into making tin cans at home. Now, he's saying, look, this is going to be inflationary. You know, this is not good news. You know, Americans are saying things are bad. And it's the first time since, you know, the Depression that Americans are down on the economy. And his argument is that the tariffs would destroy. Here's what he writes. These tariffs would also devastate those who rely on food pantries to feed themselves and their family. Every year, over 53 million Americans depend on our nation's 60,000 plus food pantries, food banks, and meal programs. Non-perishable canned goods are essential to keeping these efforts running. And, you know, having these tariffs, he argues, you know, just wrong. And I keep coming back to, I'm a big supporter of domestic production for domestic consumption. As I've said before, I think Joe Biden is doing the right thing in moving us in a direction that is reshoring manufacturing. But you have the CEO going, you know, Americans shouldn't have to subsidize multi-billion dollar steel companies at the grocery checkout. I mean, they're so good at that messaging because you go, yeah, why should I have to pay for the steel mill with my food dollars? It's quite remarkable. In that this is the outrage.
You know, the headline I read, Biden's new tax could squash my family's can company. And this guy talks about, you know, he's been relying on foreign imports to run his company. And that's where his margin is, by being able to get cheaper foreign products as inputs. And now, we didn't always work like this. That's not how business models were set up. Now, here's the thing. I love the fact that, you know, one of the little headlines was, you know, China doesn't want a trade war, but they'll retaliate. Of course they don't want a trade war, because they're holding all the cards now. They were the manufacturer. They're where a lot of this stuff is coming from. Now you go, but, you know, Rick, only 10% is coming from China. And that might be true. But the conversation is, again, they're saying we should be trading with our partners. And I agree, we trade with our partners. I'm not an isolationist. Again, let me repeat that. I'm not someone who says we slam the doors shut. I am someone that says we should be reevaluating our trade policies. And this is what Joe Biden's doing. This is the reality of what we need to be doing. Evaluating our trade policies and going, you know, do we have foreign competitors who are just dumping and destroying jobs here? Do we have relationships with people where we're both doing better off? Now, understand, there's a lot of people who are complaining about what Biden's doing. I personally think it's important that we have a reset in this country, an industrial policy that moves us towards, again, domestic production for domestic consumption. We build the things we need. The things that we can, we build here at home. And right now you're hearing a lot of voices screaming from within the Democratic Party, you know, Biden should quit. And a lot of them, those are the neoliberals who want us to return back to the good old days. The, you know, those same horrible policies that got us into the mess that Biden's trying to clean up. Yeah, that's where we are. Now, look, do I admit that Biden has a really hard time getting the words out? Yeah, absolutely. There's a struggle there. It's going to be an uphill climb. It's the policies, though, because here's what I know. I know the direction that he is taking us and the legacy that he wants his presidency to be and his memory to be is the guy who reset this country and moved us in a better worker-centric, working-class direction. And I know everyone's, oh, the economy's terrible, everything's down. Dean Baker over at the Center for Economic Policies and Priorities came out with a piece to be thankful for over Thanksgiving. And he points out that, you know, other than Japan, we have the lowest inflation rate of all the major countries. But you've got a right-wing outrage machine here just again, feeding us the outrage. You know, wages have outpaced inflation. Wages right now are higher than prices than they were before the pandemic. That's a reality. Unemployment's been near and below 4% for nearly 2 years now. Got that under control. Black unemployment, historic lows, record employment rates for people with disabilities, you know, record levels of people being satisfied with their jobs. Things are going in the right direction. Health insurance is more affordable now. We've got all this good stuff going on, and yet a right-wing outrage machine that just wants to keep us angry. Outraged. I would like a little aside of outrage with my outrage, please, without actually talking about what direction we should be going as a country. Now, again, I say this all the time. Republicans focus on this is this little nugget, this kernel. We've got this. It's the can of corn to be outraged about today. Don't mind the policy. Don't mind the big picture. Don't mind the job creation and the shift here at home. It's about the outrage right now. Don't think down the road because that's not important. They're good at that. They're good at the hey, over here, the shiny thing. Here, laser pointer. When we should be focusing on the big picture. What kind of a country do we want to have? What kind of an economy do we want? And what kind of an economy do we want to leave for our children? One where, hey, we get cheap stuff. Nobody's got a job. We got cheap stuff. Or one where people actually produce and consume the things that they want and need right here at home. I want to hear your thoughts. Email me, Rick at therickSmithShow.com. Questions, comments, something on your mind. I want to hear it. Going to take a quick break. Right back. Stick around. You'll listen to The Rick Smith Show.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
We are AFGE, the American Federation of Government Employees. We represent 700,000 federal and D.C. government workers who are the vital threads of the fabric of American life. We support our nation's military. We take care of our nation's veterans. We protect our nation's borders. We respond to our nation's crises and natural disasters. We provide services to our nation's seniors. The American Federation of Government Employees. We work for America.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Just got to tell you, I love this. Trump is talking about revamping the RNC. If you continue with those debates, he's going to revamp the Republican National Committee. And I think that's great. Good for him. Good for him. I hope he does. Today, evidently, released a doctor's note. Yes, Donald Trump got a doctor's note. And a new doctor this time. A guy named Bruce Arnwald. Evidently, Bruce described Trump as his personal physician since 2001. The crazy-looking guy that he had back a while ago, I guess he's gone. What was his name? Buchwald or something? I don't actually remember. But evidently, he is in excellent health. And his cognitive exams were exceptional. He had exceptional cognitive exams. And I got to tell you, I'm seriously questioning that. Because I've watched his speeches. And look, I'm not busting on the guy. I'm just saying, look, you know, there's this exceptional cognitive thing that they keep making a big deal out of. Because they're trying to make this a dividing point between him and Biden. Biden's now 81. Happy birthday, Mr. President. And Trump's, what, 77? So there's not a huge gap. Trump is not, a lot younger. But he does ramble. For instance, he was in Iowa talking about golden showers. And how do you get on that in a presidential speech? Oh, yeah, it was about the tape supposedly from Russia. And he went on this whole spiel where you go, exactly how did you get there? And maybe don't. And it's one of those things where he's talked about it and it now made me go, yeah, I don't know, maybe it's true. Who knows? Maybe it's true. And the sad thing is, and we're in such a weird kind of moment. And this is what bothers me. Is that we're in this weird kind of moment where we're not getting anything done. And I go back to what I said a moment ago. Republicans are really good at attacking individuals, really good at attacking things. They've got no policy chops. They've got no agenda for the future. In fact, you ask the average Trump voter, what policies do you want to move for? Very few of them have any real policy aims. It's all about, we're going to go get Biden. We're going to go after the January 6th commission. Because evidently we're reimagining that now. And there was an interesting article that pointed out that in this Republican House, in this legislative session, the 118th Congress, they are on the path to being the least productive Congress since the Great Depression, since 1931-32. And are you surprised by that? And the answer is no. You go back to the Trump years. There was not an overly productive legislative agenda. All they got through legislatively were tax cuts, because that's all that's really important to them. Lining the pockets of the very wealthy at the expense of of working people. But I look at this and I come back to the fact that they are the least productive. And you go, now remember, these are the people, these are the business folks. These are supposedly the people who, you know, America first, get to work. Speaking of America first, evidently Marjorie Taylor Greene, she has a new book out. Huh? Yeah? New book. I didn't know she could read, but there's a new book out. Now, understand, she is, you know, one of the big supporters of Donald Trump's America First policy. And she's out there pushing for the America First stuff. In fact, she's the founder of the America First Caucus. And, you know, she's called for meaningful work for Americans. She's called for all kinds of stuff. But she's got a new book out. Anyone want to hazard a guess? Yes or no? Was the book printed in the U.S. or not? America First! It's kind of like my Trump supporter friends who have hats made in China. You know, they got the red hats. They didn't buy the official Donald Trump version, but they got the, because I guess some of his, I guess his stuff, the official stuff that you pay through, you know, like $100 for, I guess that's somewhat made in the U.S. I'm not 100% sure, but her books are now printed in Canada. And again, you know, this is the woman who says America first. I love the Ken Buck, the representative from Colorado. He was quoted by the Washington Post saying that, I don't think it's possible for MTG to get any more extreme. Maybe more unhinged, but not more extreme. And you know what? Here's the thing. I think Ken Buck is not wrong. And this is one of those moments where you go, you know, see, both sides of the aisle can't agree on something. But this is where I wish that they would have something of a policy. And, you know, with Thanksgiving coming up and the hope that something renewed, something refreshed, and maybe we tell ourselves the story of the first Thanksgiving again, and this brings us together, something to where we actually start talking about how are we going to make working people's lives better. I know, it's really a leap, but I look at this Congress, and with Mike Johnson as the speaker, I don't expect anything different than what we've gotten. In fact, you know, he's now endorsing this some new weird conspiracy around January 6th. So we're going to hear a bunch of that because, you know, more, I guess the videotapes have been, there have been more videotapes released, which you can expect, you know, people to spin however they want. But what is going to make working people's lives better? Again, I come back to, the polling says Americans believe the economy is going in the right direction or in the wrong direction. The country's going in the wrong direction because that's all they're spun. That's what the polling says. Do you believe the country's going in the wrong direction? Yes, I do. What have Republicans proposed? And this is where I keep coming back to. Don't listen to the rhetoric. Don't listen to the outrage. Don't buy the candy. Even if they give it to you for free, don't take it. Your parents should have told you that. But what's their agenda? And the answer is they don't have one. You know, don't listen to what they're saying. Don't listen to the outrage, the attention. You know, like any child, they're looking for attention. Look at what they do. The least productive Congress since the Great Depression. And, you know, look, we've had some do-nothing Congresses in my lifetime. We've had some do-nothings there who don't want to govern. These folks truly do not want to govern. They truly do not want. They don't want working people to get ahead. Whether it's, you know, fighting for the corporate interest to ensure that we don't protect our industries here at home, which I am a supporter of, and I've said that a million times. Again, I'm a protectionist, not an isolationist. We trade with our friends. We trade. We're mutually beneficial. But we don't continue to pursue a policy where we buy things that we used to make here only because it's more exploitable labor and more exploitable environmental regulations. We've got a lot of work to do. And Republicans have proven to us time and time again that they are just not willing, interested, able, whatever you want to throw in there. They're just not going to do it. Not at all.
Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK.
ABC News, I'm Andy Field. They aren't there yet. But the White House says a deal to free more hostages taken by Hamas is close. U.S. and Qatar trying to broker that agreement. Fighting intensifying between Israeli forces and Hamas near another hospital in northern Gaza. Defense Secretary Lloyd Austin making an unannounced visit to Kyiv. He reassured Ukrainian President Zelensky the U.S. is with them for the long haul in its war with Russia.
This is about, you know, not living in a world where a dictator can wake up one day and decide to annex the property of his peaceful neighbor. That's not the world that we want to live in.
Austin also announced another $100 million in U.S. aid. Microsoft has hired OpenAI's former CEO Sam Altman and the company's ex-president Greg Brockman to lead a new advanced AI research team. A three-day celebration of life for former First Lady Rosalynn Carter begins a week from today. This is ABC News.
For Civic Media News, I'm Nate Wiggehow. Here's what Wisconsin needs to know. The athletic director at the University of Wisconsin-Platteville has died. The university did not provide details Monday, only that Christina Navarro-Krupka was pregnant and her death was unexpected. Navarro-Krupka grew up in Madison and was in her fourth year as director of athletics and assistant chancellor at Platteville. The Wisconsin Supreme Court hears arguments in a lawsuit challenging the state's legislative maps on Tuesday. Luke Berg is with the Conservative Institute for Law and Liberty. He says there's an easy fix to claims that non-contiguous districts are unconstitutional.
If you were simply to take the islands and put them in the districts that surround them, it would eliminate the contiguity problem and you wouldn't have any population problems in the existing map.
Berg was on Upfront on WISN-TV. The map's challengers will argue that the way the maps were drawn was unconstitutional. I'm Nate Wiggehow, Civic Media News.
Don't let biased algorithms or degree screens or exclusive professional networks or stereotypes. Don't let anything keep you from discovering the half of the workforce who are stars. Workers skilled through alternative routes rather than a bachelor's degree. It's time to tear the paper ceiling and see the stars beyond it. Find out how you can make stars part of your talent strategy at tearthepaperceiling.org. Brought to you by Opportunity at Work and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast. Overcast tonight with a low of 32. Winds out of the east, 5 to 10 miles per hour. High of 40 tomorrow. Cloudy. Tomorrow night, lows around 23. I'm meteorologist Paul Trombley on Lake Air, WLAK, 1260 AM. Right now, 41.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
I'm not even clear from conflicting headlines whether or not Robin Voss has the cojones to move forward with impeachment against Megan Multh. Why would he do such a thing? You know, just a couple of weeks after he said he wasn't going to do such a thing. Well, he's been threatened, huh? By what? A group headed by his primary opponent, Adam Steed.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Weekday afternoons from 4 till 6 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the app.
Hey, son, how are you feeling?
I'm fine, Pops.
What's on your mind?
I can't explain it.
When your kid can't find the language, find the lyrics. Start a conversation at soundedouttogether.org. Brought to you by Ed Council and Pivotal Ventures.
In touch with the City of Lakes. In touch with you. This is Lake Air, 1260 AM WLAK, Amory's radio station.
Future.org.
Welcome back to the Rick Smith Show. Now, here is Rick Smith.
Thanks so much for having me, Rick. Appreciate it.
So I'm looking at this, at the sad reality that we've seen unions assaulted over the last 40 years. And now finally people are coming back around to saying, hey, we demand better. We demand better wages, hours, conditions, all of that stuff. What made you guys organize?
So I think, I mean, obviously a combination of those, you know, better pay, better, you know, benefits as far as retirement is concerned, those have been cut back significantly over the past two decades, specifically with Wells Fargo. You know, for a lot of branches, a lot of it is staffing. So as, you know, new CEOs, specifically the most recent, Charlie Scharf has come in, made massive, massive cuts to the staffing models that's impacted our ability to service our communities. And for our branch specifically, that's a huge, huge motivator. And for a lot of other branches that are organizing, it's the same thing.
You know, again, you look at, you know, some of the things that have happened over the years and you go through the pandemic and, you know, we're frontline heroes, you're essential. I'm sure you guys heard all that stuff, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Because we were, you know, customer facing. We don't really have the option of going remote or, you know, being a kind of an out of office and still being productive. So we were still, you know, there and doing what we could to kind of work around the pandemic parameters to make sure people were safe. But during that time was when a lot of this these cutbacks started, and they've used it as a justification to kind of continue on as they're increasing those profits and cutting costs.
Now, your coworkers in Albuquerque, New Mexico, and some of your company mates out in Bethel, Alaska, have filed for an NLRB election. Walk me through how the process began with this, because, you know, we've talked with people who go, you know, our industry never had, we don't have unions. Unions aren't something we've been able to get. What made you think you could do this? And walk me through the process of you actually doing it.
So I think that there's obviously a lot of momentum with unions. I mean, you have, you know, SAG-AFTRA, you've got UAW, Teamsters. There's been a lot of, you know, good labor movement lately. And I think that's really encouraging to employees and workers that are in sectors that are not traditionally unionized. You know, the finance industry, I think the figure is around 1% of, you know, finance workers are unionized. And a lot of that comes from a fear of retaliation or what could, you know, they could close our branches or, you know, whatever the case may be, regardless of whether or not it's legal. That's kind of besides the point. The fear is still there. And so with these new wins, it really did just become more possible, more attainable. And so as we've watched this in the news with all these different union wins, it just became something we're like, we got to have some of this. We need it. This industry needs it. And, you know, we're willing to stick our neck out about it.
No, it's something worth fighting for. Now, you know, when I talk to people who have, you know, for the first time, you know, do you have a union background, any union family stuff in your background that would make you, you know, go, hey, this is the way we should go? I mean, for a lot of folks, this is a huge leap, not just, as you pointed out, the risks that go in it, but the uncertainty of knowing what's on the other side. Do you have any background?
So on my dad's side, there is some, you know, background with steelworkers. You know, my grandparents have a background in, you know, the steelworker industry. And so there was a bit of perspective there. It's not my first, you know, kind of exposure to that. But I've always, you know, had an interest. My background for my degree is in politics. And so I have a some might say like a better understanding of how those things work just in general because of my interest in my studies. So for me, that's kind of where a lot of that has started, you know, way back when. But it's always been something where, you know, for a long time, it's just like, you know, things are okay, right? And I think a lot of workers were in that same boat. And it just kind of got to a boiling point where, you know, we realized that nobody was listening. And so that's kind of what spurred us on to looking at other alternatives after exhausting everything within the bank.
Yeah, that's, you know, again, I come back to, you know, it's usually not about wages as much as it's about conditions and treatment. And, you know, because I did some more organizing for a number of years where, again, I come back to it's, you know, it's how people feel they're being treated. And if they feel like they're being disrespected, if they feel like they're not being valued, this is one of those real motivating things to demand respect. And look, wages, hours, and conditions are important as well. But that treatment is almost more important than the other stuff for a lot of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And for us specifically, I think that, yeah, it really stemmed from this this feeling that, you know, nobody's listening. And there are people that are making these decisions and that have the capacity to change our conditions. And for some reason, it's just like the buck stops at a certain point, and we should be talking to the people that have that capacity. And that's not to disparage the people that are, you know, in our direct line of management. In many ways, they're being squeezed in the same way.
Sure.
But they just don't have the capacity to do so, just, you know, with the structure of how unionizing works. So, yeah, we're doing this not only for ourselves, but for people that, you know, are going to benefit from this regardless. You know, lower and middle management are being squeezed in the same way. But somebody's got to take the lead, right?
No, that's extremely important, but to be that person to say, I'm going to be the change that I want to see happen. I give you credit for that. But look, Wells Fargo is a behemoth of a corporation. It's kind of like the people who are taking on Starbucks right now. It seems almost insurmountable. You know, what are you hoping that comes out of this? I mean, you filed for an NLRB election. Do you expect the general kind of union busting that happens in most places where they bring in people to captive audience meetings, harassment, intimidation, firings? Are you expecting any of that stuff? Or do you think it's possible that they could recognize your unit and say, okay, we're going to bargain with you. We're going to make things better. We want everybody at our branch to be happy and focusing on the customers. What are you expecting?
Yeah, so I mean, obviously, in a perfect world, we would love for them to take the opportunity to voluntarily recognize the union. We have given them 7 days to do so. So there is that opportunity. And if they choose to take it, I think that it would speak highly for, you know, Charlie Sharp's commitment. So he says, to changing the bank and improving, you know, improving our culture, all of those kinds of things. We are definitely prepared for, you know, retaliation. We are prepared for an intimidation or anti, you know, union or union busting campaign. We have already heard reports. CWA had a big mailing to branches. I think it was like something like 24,000 flyers that went out to each individual member at branches. And we have already heard reports that managers, despite the official line from Wells Fargo of non-interference, you know, intercepting those letters, destroying those letters, retaining them from employees, despite their requests for those once they've noticed that they're there. So I think there's going to be a discrepancy. I think it'll be incumbent upon, you know, those in the labor world, but also in media, to hold Wells Fargo accountable to what they're saying versus what they're doing. And so we're prepared for whatever they might throw at us. But I think that this really is an opportunity for them to demonstrate something different and a different path forward. Beneficial State Bank just had, you know, recently within the last couple of years, their workers file for a union election. And they did choose to voluntarily recognize them. I think that that's the best path forward.
So there is an example here. You wouldn't be the first banking union. That there are some others out there.
Yeah. So Beneficial State Bank is, you know, a smaller bank. Obviously, we would be the first major bank. Whenever you think of, you know, the big banks,
right.
This would be the first major bank. But yeah, there's definitely examples out there. And it just kind of goes to show that this method can work, and you can, you know, you can get further by working with your employees than trying to stifle them. It really is an opportunity that Wells Fargo really is being handed, because, you know, they've had enough bad press over the last several years, decade. And this is an opportunity for them to maybe, you know, squeak out a win.
You listen to the Rick Smith Show. We're with Sabrina Perez. She's a senior premier banker. She's organizing with Wells Fargo's Workers United. You can check out their website, betterbanks.org. We'll get links out on social media. You can take a look at that, betterbanks.org, the website. Now, again, I come back to, you know, whenever you see a strike, whenever you see something going on, it's important that all the workers are standing in solidarity. But it's also important that the community stands in solidarity. So for me, this is an opportunity for folks to join my Adopt a Striker or an Organizer campaign and get involved in this. What can I do? What can our listeners do? What can people do to help say, hey, you know what, Wells Fargo, you know, honor these folks' requests, honor their rights, treat them with dignity and respect. What can folks do?
So I think that there's a lot of different things that, you know, just everyday people can do, acts of solidarity. I mean, even if you're just a Wells Fargo client, you know, you have the ability to give feedback on every transaction that you perform with the bank. This is an opportunity for you to communicate, hey, I think you should respect workers' rights to organize. You know, you should implement non-interference and make sure that you're not doing any kind of intimidation. I think that's a huge thing from the public. And I think that that public pressure and, you know, media scrutiny will be the difference between how they react and how they are acting.
Yeah, I mean, you got to shine light on things. Because, look, I want all workers to be empowered to do the right thing. And look, you know, Wells Fargo got themselves into some trouble several years back. And I don't want you to get into those waters. But the reality is an empowered workforce maybe solves some of those problems and doesn't let them get into those kind of situations. And I say this all the time, having an empowered workforce saves the company from itself sometimes. And I think this could be one of those scenarios.
Yeah, absolutely. Even just to be able to address issues, you know, at a higher level before they get out of control, and hold some accountability, you know, on every level. I think that, you know, unionized companies, you know, can often run more efficiently, more productively, you know, more profitably. So I think if you're working with your employees, happy employees, you know, are a lot more productive than unhappy ones. So, you know, we're really trying to, you know, I've said this several times, that we're trying to bring, you know, some of the community back to community banking. And that's kind of what Wells Fargo has tried to, you know, sell themselves on as a community bank. And, you know, we really can't do that if we're not investing in the communities that we're a part of.
Yeah, you might actually get me to put some of my money in a bank. I use credit unions because, you know, overwhelmingly credit unions are, you know, from my view, much more responsive to customers. Maybe this could be a way Wells Fargo gets someone like me back in their doors to make sure that their workers have decent wages, hours, conditions, and a voice. But ultimately, you know, when you come back to this, and this is where I kind of want to wrap this up, is, you know, you want to ensure that the work that you do is compensated fairly, that you get, you know, some seniority rights, that you're not at will employees. There's a lot of this of saying, look, this is just being a working person in this country and having a bit of security and an ability to support our families. I think that's a simple message as well.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think basic dignity, basic, you know, livable wage, be able to support your family and retire with some dignity. I don't think that's a lot to ask, especially with a company of this size.
I'm right there with you. Sabrina, I appreciate you taking some time with us. By all means, please come back and keep us up to date on how things are progressing, because I want to keep an eye on this.
Definitely, Rick. Thank you so much for having me on. Have a good night.
Thanks so much, Sabrina Perez. I want to hear your thoughts. Would a unionized bank, would that be something to get you in their doors? Would that be something that you think is important? I do. I'm going to take a quick break. Right back with your thoughts. Stick around. You're listening to The Rick Smith Show. We're working people. Come to talk.
The phone lines are open. Give Rick a call at 1-866-416-RICK. That's 1-866-416-7425.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in 2. On this day in labor history, the year was 1888. That was the day that William LeGrand Bundy is credited with inventing something that has become a daily part of life for millions of workers. His time recorder was a time clock that could record when workers arrived and left their jobs each day. The clock would record the time on a paper tape when a worker inserted his or her individualized numbered key. Bundy was a jeweler and an inventor from New York. After inventing his time clock, he went into business with his brother Harlow and founded the Bundy Manufacturing Company. With the growth of factories, there was more and more demand for time clocks. They were considered more exact and efficient than human timekeeping. Keeping track of hours worked and labor costs became an essential part of squeezing every drop of profit out of the industrial workforce. The Bundy brothers located their company in the city of Binghamton in southern New York. Business thrived. Other inventors put their own twist on the time clock. At the turn of the 20th century, the Bundy Company merged with several other timekeeping outfits, forming the International Time Recorder Company. Workers across the United States, Canada, and Europe had their work hours recorded by international time clocks. Later, the company became part of International Business Machines, or IBM, one of the worldwide leaders in workplace technologies. Over the years, new innovations have been introduced to employee timekeeping, such as time cards and computer-linked swipe cards. Working 9 to 5, what a way to make a living, barely getting by, it's all taking and no giving. Labor History in 2, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show. For more information, go to laborhistoryin2.com.
Listening to The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk.
So evidently, Monsanto got themselves in a little bit of trouble. Fourth straight loss for Bayer. Roundup, the chemical Roundup. Evidently, they've again, lost another round of lawsuits. This time, a woman from New York, a guy from Missouri, and another guy from California were awarded $61.1 million in compensatory damages, $500 million each in punitive damages, because, you know, they each was diagnosed with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma. And, you know, they're saying the cause, this chemical, which, you know, evidently there have been studies that, you know, this glyphosate is safe for human consumption. And look, I've been hearing for years that not. The sad reality is we let these big companies do these kind of things. And you have to wonder. I keep going back to this swinging door between government and corporate interests. I keep going back to the lobbying that goes on and the kind of policy making, that, again, that revolving door of people going from industry back to government, back to industry, back to government. For instance, Ron Klain is now the guy who was Biden's chief of staff. He's going to be the chief legal guy over at Airbnb. It's that kind of stuff that's... And look, is it new? No, it's not. But again, we're going back towards monopoly again. You've got these big companies who are doing these things and ultimately not being held liable for them on the big picture. This is a lot of money for a couple of people. And trust me, on appeal, when this goes down the road, the $500 million in punitive damages, that's going to be reduced to a pittance. And we've seen this before, because you see I always love hearing people say, well, you know, that woman burnt herself with coffee. She got a gazillion dollars. No, what she got at the end of it is pretty much what she asked for, which was just to pay the medical bills and some of her costs. Now, the award was enormous. Upon appeal, reduced. And for me, I come back to this stuff that, you know, you look at these big companies who pollute, who put out products that are harmful. They push and they lobby and they do all kinds of stuff to get these things approved, and then they go and they hurt people, lots of people. And, you know, there's a slap on the wrist. Don't do it again. Now, I don't want to be one of those people go, well, you know, you're killing everybody. No, I'm not saying that. But there's some research being done out there that says, you know, this stuff isn't good for us. And I go back to a government of for and by we the people. Why do we have regulators who continually allow this stuff to happen? Because businesses... They've got huge, large pockets with lots of lobbying opportunities and lots of ability to get what they want done. This is my concern in this. So, but I saw the lawsuit. I'm going, yeah, all right. You know, let's throw this out there. Let's quick go to Steve on line one. Steve, what's on your mind, buddy?
Hello.
Yeah, what's on your mind, Steve?
Yes, so I wanted to make a couple of points, and by and large echoing what you were already saying, I mean, you've got a system that's rigged against the average American and by and large people around the world. I mean, yes, you hear about the crazy stories, you know, that somebody got X amount of money in a verdict of such and such, you know, judgment. Okay, yeah, but as you point out, yeah, that gets appealed to no end, and then, of course, you know, a lot of people are forced to sort of settle for something far less. Otherwise, you know, it's, okay, you might get your money 20 years from now. So, you know, if somebody's mistreating your mother in a nursing home, well, okay, you know, you don't want to wait 20 years. I mean, she's going to be long gone by the time you see anything, as opposed to getting something now so that you can help take care of her.
Yep.
And the reality is that this country was built by a lot of people who decided to, you know, take advantage of other individuals, everything from permanently damaging them in terms of the accidents that happen, the things that chemicals can do to us, and the degradation of our environment. I mean, you name it. And then in the end, you know, the way that things are structured in this country, you know, you can make billions, and then because it's a limited liability corporation, you know, once you've taken everything that's worth anything out of XYZ area or whatever, you know, the company dissolves and you leave the taxpayers with a giant hole in the ground, or in many cases something toxic that they have to then pay to fix, or, you know, to make safe again. I mean, you know, this whole notion about balance just doesn't exist. You know, the people who are making the money are not paying for the cost of what's called externalities,
right,
in this society. And again, you know, that's because, as you point out, you know, it's a rigged system. My brother, he works with a company, and they basically bring some of the biggest names in politics and big business to the stage to do speaking events and so forth. And yeah, I mean, you'd be amazed at what people who used to be in government make. You know, they're no longer, nobody talks about their names anymore, but hey, they're making 50, 80 grand, 100 grand a year at some convention and to talk for a couple of minutes, you know, to do X, Y, and Z lobbying, you know. So, I mean, it's not quid pro quo, but, you know, when you're trying to get something passed and you go and talk to a congressman or senator and say, yeah, you know, we'd really appreciate whatever you can do for us on this. You know, it's good for the country, it's good for your state. And, you know, I mean, we're really impressed with a guy like you. You know, that's we all know what that means.
I had a friend who was in Congress, in fact, from Illinois, who said, look, nobody's ever bought my vote. But they get my ear 15 minutes at a time when I ask them for donations to help me run for re-election. So I hear their message over and over. They didn't buy my vote, but they got my ear.
Oh, absolutely. And of course, you know, when it comes time to that, you decide that a few hundred thousand dollars a year, you know, isn't very much money, you know, and you're ready to leave office. Well, yeah, you know, then it's everything flies under the radar because people like to keep it very quiet as to who they went to work for. You know, but if you do a little bit of digging, you find out that people who made some of the major decisions in this country with regard to past legislation are miraculously working for companies that were directly involved in that legislation.
Yeah, I mean, we had a vice president who was the head of a war machine. So,
yeah,
there is that. I appreciate the thoughts, though, Steve. Thank you so much.
Gotcha.
No, look, you know, like Steve said, you'd be amazed at where some of these politicians end up and what they get for, an hour speech. It's really remarkable, the kind of money that corporate America throws around. But you know what? They're going to fight you tooth and nail if you want a better wages. And I think about, you know, the person we just talked to, Sabrina Perez, we just talked to, and you know, going up against a behemoth like Wells Fargo. What do you think that they're going to throw at those poor workers? You know, if they really want to, you know, what kind of intimidation and harassment do you think is coming their way? Because our labor laws are so badly broken. And this is a giant corporation who could easily afford, you know, the couple of pennies more in wages, the little bit better health care, could easily do it, but won't, because they don't want to, they don't have to, and it would send a bad message. Makes you wonder.
You're listening to Lake Air, WLAK 1260 AM Amory, and always streaming on the Civic Media app.
ABC.